It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The UK just got a new prime minister, almost. The flamboyant Boris Johnson winning a ballot of governing Conservative Party members to be their leader. He'll take over tomorrow after current Prime Minister Theresa May leaves Downing Street and the Queen asks him to form a new government. He sounds up to the task.
Deliver, unite, and defeat was not the perfect acronym for an election campaign, since unfortunately it spells dud. But they forgot the final E, my friends. E for energize. And I say to all the doubters, dude, we are going to energize the country.
Johnson will first have to get Britain to exit the European Union, or Brexit. He led that winning referendum 3 years ago. He promises the UK will leave by October 31st, with or without a deal. He'll have to win over skeptical EU officials.
He's got optimism, enthusiasm, he puts a smile on people's face, and he has total, unshakable confidence in our amazing country.
Still, as London mayor and foreign secretary, some criticized him for making gaffes and not having a grip on policy.
Actually, I think what matters is that we're getting somebody in Downing Street who's not up to the job. He's not the kind of serious politician that we need for serious times.
Johnson does have a good friend in the White House. President Trump was no fan of Prime Minister May. The special relationship was strained. Observers say Johnson's populist and nationalist take on issues makes him a better fit with the president.
Really good man is going to be the Prime Minister of the UK now, Boris Johnson. Good man. He's tough and he's smart. They're saying Britain Trump. They call him Britain Trump, and people are saying that's a good thing.
In fact, the British are divided on Johnson. After years of drift, some say he might be worth a try.
The country needed sorting out, and hopefully he'd be the person to do it.
There's talk of Johnson visiting the White House in the near future. Bojo, as he's called here, still has battles to fight in the UK, fence mending to do in Europe.
Okay, Sandy Rios with you this morning and back and happy to be, and I'll talk about that in a second, but I want to talk about Boris Johnson. First, you know, Katie Hopkins is often our guest here, and Katie had told us a couple of months ago she thought Boris Johnson had a very good chance of winning the prime ministership, and he did. I mean, that's amazing, and he is a character much like our president. Who's our president? Oh, Donald Trump, yes. And he's got that crazy mop of hair. It's really, the similarities are really pretty funny. That doesn't mean they're identical. But of course, Boris Johnson was one of the outspoken leaders of the Brexit movement. And Theresa May has really made such a muddle of Brexit. I think the British people, personally, I think they're just sick of the chaos that's ensued by the lack of leadership. And then I think capstoned by the video that just came out over the weekend of those Iranian black mask soldiers rappelling down on top of that British tanker. And that was just an amazing thing. Proud that they had pirated away a British ship, and the response of the British was just nothing. There was no response. Theresa May was waiting for this election to take place, and the government didn't have leadership. And I'm not sure, honestly, if Labour is in charge or the left is in charge, but just like here, they don't want to do anything. They don't know how to fight. Boris Johnson's not like that. I sort of wonder if that visual of the Iranian mask marauders, you know, rappelling onto the top of that tanker might have propelled Boris Johnson into victory. I don't know. You heard his voice there. I don't know enough about him. Katie Hopkins, of course, is a British commentator, and she feels much the same about issues as I do. So she thinks he's a great choice, and we'll see as things develop. I'm sure he's not as you know, he's not going to be, you know, a Sunday school teacher either, like President Trump isn't. So we'll see how Boris Johnson develops and grows. It could be. One other little interesting thing. Remember that the ambassador, the British ambassador to the United States, who was the president got so angry with, and he was called back to London because he had basically advised Theresa May's government that President Trump was incompetent, incapable, whatever the names were, whatever his names for that were. And the president found out about that, and Theresa May stood by him, as did other British leaders, but Boris Johnson did not. And so that's another distinction. So we'll see. I actually do think that the British people must, on some level, be relieved that they finally have someone who wants to do something. And so we'll see if that something is going to be good. I think he's really determined to get Britain out of the EU, and that's what they voted for. And, of course, that's what the politicians have tried to stop. They've tried to muddy it. They came up with this horrible agreement that was all – it was kind of like Mitch McConnell negotiating with the Democrats, giving them everything they want and coming to some sort of quote-unquote agreement, calling it bipartisan and preening about it, much like the budget deal, which hopefully we'll get into in just a few minutes. And so this is kind of what the heads of the British Parliament, as they negotiated with the EU on Brexit, they just gave up everything so that the deal ended up being horrible, and that's why it didn't happen yet. So we'll see if they actually can. I think the deadline is October. So we'll see if he can actually pull them out and if he can do it in a way that is good for the British people. President Trump, of course, has a promised support. He's promised that we will beef up our economic entanglement or involvement with Britain. We'll help you. We'll sell you goods. We'll make good trades. And we'll help fill in the gap that the European Union is going to leave. And so there you go. I'm kind of excited about that, and I wanted to start the show with it. I know what's happening on Capitol Hill. We'll get to that, too. Yes, we will. I just wanted to tell you, I want to thank Christian Adams for filling in for me Monday. I'm sure, I don't know what he talked about yet. I haven't had a chance to ask him, but I'm sure he did a great job. I know you enjoy it when he fills in. And also Fred Jackson, who does an incredible job. He's the head of our news department. So he hosted yesterday. So thanks a lot, Fred, for doing that. And if you wondered what I was doing, I thought I would just tell you a little bit about it. I actually was at a fundraising evening for Congressman Jim Jordan at the home of Matt and Mercedes Schlapp. And you know that Matt is the head of the American Conservative Union. You see him on television a lot. He's a good friend, and I've known him since he worked in the Bush administration. And his wife, Mercedes, is the communications, one of the top communications people in the Trump White House, except that Mercedes is leaving to work on the campaign. So they had it in their home, and they're just the most down-to-earth, wonderful people, really enjoy them. And the special guests were Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner. I was very happy to have a few minutes with them. I didn't have much time because it's not possible. But, you know, they are, Ivanka is beautiful. I know you know that. I've been in the room with her. This is only the second time. Jared, I think, if I had to, I'm talking about personal traits now, not policy, is a, you know, sort of a very formal, and he's very tall and slender, and they, you know, they make a very striking couple. And he comes across, I think, on camera as kind of cold. But I sort of think he's just shy. And actually, my interactions with them were very, very warm. I had some good interactions. That doesn't mean I agree with them on policy. In fact, I'm hoping to get to criminal justice reform this morning a little bit to tell you what's happening with that, because I think it's a disaster. And I think they've been given too much. Listen, they are. I think they're trying to do what they feel is right, but I just don't think they are qualified and have enough knowledge. I don't think they know enough about the other side. But I have to tell you that they were there in support of Congressman Jim Jordan, and they said wonderful things about him, and we're so grateful for the way he has defended President Trump. And I echo that too. So, and you know, remember that the leaders in the Republican Party are not going to help in any form or fashion any member of the Freedom Caucus. They want to purge and get rid of them. They're doing everything they can to stop any kind of, they don't give them money like they do other really bad congressmen, like Will Hurd in Texas. Mr. Anti-Trump, Mr. Pro-Immigration. He's getting all kinds of money and help, but not Jim Jordan. So you see, that's the way things are. So it was interesting to me that Ivanka and Jared were willing to come out in support of Jim Jordan. So I think that's good news. The other thing, I was in Chicago then over the weekend. I'm just telling you, this is personal. This is personal. I'm just going to tell you, one of my husband's friends has early onset dementia, one of his dear friends, college roommate. And it's just a very difficult situation. So there was a gathering in Chicago just to be with him, with my other roommates. And so that was, you know, I would say it was a fun but also very poignant gathering. And that's, of course, my husband and I always pray that we'll be a blessing and can bring words of encouragement. But that's such a terrible situation for a couple that's too young to be going through that. So that's what we were doing. And then Monday night in Chicago, I hosted the family pack boat cruise on Lake Michigan, which I used to be a big part of Family Pack Federal. And the director, Paul Caprio, is a very dear friend of mine. We've been in battles for years together all over the country. And so I always host this cruise. And the guest of honor was Candace Owen. And Candace just gave a delightful speech. She's just such a delightful person, honestly, such energy and passion, and had some chance to just be with her a little bit. She is a dynamo. And of course, if you don't know about Candace, I'm sure most of you do, she's a young black activist, who was not always, conservative. She was raised by a Democratic family. And it was during Trump's election that she actually began to see things in a different way. It was just interesting how she told that story. She's very bright, very intellectual, and some things just didn't add up. And as she sort of started putting two and two together, she realized that much of what she had been taught in school and even as being part of the party was just not true. So that's why she has flipped, and that's why she's such a powerhouse. And she started this, I think she calls it Blacksit, blacks leaving the Democratic Party. So she's doing that all over the country. And not just that, she's speaking other places too. But that was really a delightful evening. And one last thing I want to say about that. That's my hometown, Chicago. And as we were going around the lake and looking at the incredible buildings, because you can take the Illinois River inside of Chicago and travel inside the city itself on a boat, and the huge high rises on either side of you. It's just absolutely gorgeous. In spite of what you hear about Chicago, it is the most beautiful American city. Honestly, I don't think any other city can hold a candle to it, honestly. And the buildings are just stunning. But as I was hosting the evening, I just reflected on all the years and all the wonderful people that have come out of Chicago. And let me just pause to say, you know, on the cruise, we've had the greatest, Phyllis Schlafly, who led the fight against the Equal Rights Amendment, which will remove all differences between gender. Phyllis saw that a long time ago, and that's why she fought so hard against it. It was not about equal pay for equal work. It was about erasing the distinctions in gender. And so Phyllis was part of us. And Joe Scheidler, the godfather of the pro-life movement, was on. He's the guy that, if you don't know about Joe Scheidler, you should. He is, since Roe versus Wade was passed, Joe was the fierce opponent who organized the pro-life movement. He was the Green Beret of the pro-life movement, and he's still alive and doing well. You see, he was a Benedictine monk. Very dear friend of mine, he was on the tour. I also thought about the fact that Dwight L. Moody was a shoe salesman in Chicago. When he came to Christ, had a dramatic conversion and started what we know now as Sunday school by bringing in the little urchins, street urchins, who were overtaking the streets of Chicago and brought them in and taught them about Jesus. That Abraham Lincoln actually visited that Sunday school. Great history in that city. Great history. Wonderful people still there, still fighting, just like you and me. And so that's where I've been. And now I'm back with you. Happy to be. And now, yes, we'll talk about Bob Mueller testifying this morning. Don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor. And in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're MediShare members. And Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs. And that's how so many MediShare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in. And like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join MediShare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people. And if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different. And as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Leonard Alahar, Director of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Mr. Alahar oversees the office in charge of producing U.S. currency. Philippians 4:19 reminds us of another type of currency, the riches which come from the Lord. And my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches in glory in Jesus Christ. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Leonard Alahar as he works to maintain quality assurance in our nation's currency. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. Join us for summer, a season of prayer, as we come together in faith to make a difference in our country through the power of prayer. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. It's time to talk about the border. That story next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
There's no doubt we are facing a crisis at our southern border. Tens of thousands of illegal aliens have crossed the border. The American taxpayers have been forced to feed, clothe, and house many of the illegals, not to mention provide medical care. We are a good-hearted nation, and we have gone above and beyond to provide humanitarian assistance. There is also no doubt many children have been detained, and they are living in difficult circumstances. The numbers have been overwhelming. There are only so many places to hold the new arrivals. Now, Democrats blame the president and Republicans, but that's not who's to blame here. If you want to blame somebody, blame the parents who put their children in harm's way, and blame the Democrats for encouraging migrants to cross our borders. They have, in effect, weaponized these poor children, and that's appalling. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
So I'm outside of the Judiciary Committee. It's Mueller time, and it's going to be a long day for the former ex-Marine. The two committees, as you mentioned, Steve, expected about 5 hours of testimony. Let me show you the breakdown of where it's going to start. You see the doors opening right now. They're getting ready at 8:30 a.m., just 2.5 hours from now. It's going to start with Chairman Jerry Nadler, about 5-minute opening statement. Then the ranking member, Doug Collins, will get a 5-minute opening statement. At that point, they'll swear Mueller in. Then Mueller will give his opening statement. Then the questions begin. There's 41 members on this committee. Now, sitting next to him, as you guys mentioned, is Aaron Zebley, which is Mueller's longtime aide and his attorney. It was a last-minute request, but Chairman Nadler approved of it, although the president did not. Let me show you the tweet the president put out about that. He says, so Mueller has now asked for his longtime never-Trumper lawyer to sit beside him and help with answers. What's this all about? His lawyer represented the basement server guy who got off free in the crooked Hillary case. This should not be allowed. Rigged witch hunt. One of the Republican members of the Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan, says he doesn't have questions for Zebley. Here's who he wants to talk to. Listen.
My questions are going to be directed to Robert Mueller. They're not going to be to Aaron Zebley. In fact, I want Robert Mueller to answer the questions. In spite of the fact that you had 19 Democrat lawyers out to get the president, they still found nothing.
I want to play for you, Chairman Nadler. You know, the Democrats have said they want to drill into obstruction. Here's a little bit of what we can expect. Listen.
The president and the attorney general have systematically lied to the American people about what was in that report. And no, they've said no obstruction, no collusion. He was totally exonerated. Although those three statements are not true, it's important that the American people understand what was in that report, and then we'll go from there.
All right, so that was Griff Jenkins this morning, and I think he gave you a pretty good outline of what's going to happen in just a few minutes on Capitol Hill. And here's the thing. This Aaron Zebley was the was Robert Mueller's right-hand man on the investigation. He's been with him for a very long time. And so Congressman Jim Jordan, among others, are having a big problem with that. In fact, Jim Jordan had tweeted, rumor is that Aaron Zebley, Mueller's chief of staff, will be on the witness panel with Mueller. You don't get to change the rules right before kickoff, especially after a 22-month, $30 million investigation. And Doug Collins, who's the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, says a last-minute witness would jeopardize whether tomorrow's hearing complies with House rules. If Dems believe it's a special counsel's responsibility to testify to his report, they have no ground for outsourcing that duty at the expense of our committee's integrity. Here's the thing. Just a personal aside, I think you've heard me say, and you've heard my husband join me to say many times, that Bob Mueller is more image than he is substance. He looks like an FBI director. He walks like one. He doesn't say much, and it's probably a good thing that he doesn't, because when he opened his mouth to deliver that report, you saw what a disappointment. He does not present well. And we know because we just know that his performance as FBI director was disastrous. But that's not what was told. That's not what was repeated. When he was appointed to be special counsel, even the Republicans, oh, Bob Mueller is just, he's wonderful, impeccable character. He was not. His record before he ever went to the FBI was terrible on how he handled prosecutions and how he destroyed people's lives. And now, of course, that's a water under the bridge. And I think Bob Mueller is a terrible person to testify. And I think he's bringing in this help because he knows that. And so his handler, Aaron Zebley, is going to be added. And we don't know exactly. It was allowed by Chairman Nadler. That's not a surprise, is it? And so we'll see how that develops this morning. Then there are other things that I wanted you to know. Oh, Catherine Herridge had a report last night. Let's go back to that, because she talks about another wrinkle, and here it is.
Tonight, the highly anticipated hearing is in flux after House Democrats announced a surprise addition. Special Counsel Robert Mueller will have his attorney and longtime associate Aaron Zebley at his side. Democrats told Fox Zebley will be at the witness table with Mueller, which is not standard. Zebley was also a senior attorney on the special counsel case, handling some of the most sensitive issues. The House Judiciary Committee, led by Democratic Chairman Jerry Nadler, hosts the first round of testimony tomorrow. Democrat Adam Schiff, who leads the House Intelligence Committee, hosts the second round. Schiff told reporters today he received a similar request from Mueller to swear in Zebley as a witness. But Schiff did not want the Mueller hearing converted into a hearing with someone else. The senior Republican on the House Judiciary Committee, Doug Collins, laid down a marker, quote, a last-minute addition to the witness list would now jeopardize whether tomorrow's hearing complies with the rules of the House. This apparent stunt is unsurprising in light of the Democrats' repeated attempts to circumvent, misrepresent, and flout the rules and procedures governing this committee's business. Separately, a senior Justice Department official advised Mueller in writing to limit his testimony to the Russia report and his public statement 2 months ago after the investigation closed. Quote, the department understands that testimony regarding the work of the special counsel's office will be governed by the terms you outlined on May 29th, specifically that the information you discuss during your testimony appears in and does not go beyond the public version of your March 22nd, 2019 report to the Attorney General or your May 29th public statement. Speaking to Fox News, Attorney General William Barr said Mueller's team wanted the left and right boundary spelled out before the hearing.
They asked us for guidance in writing to explain or to tell them what our position was. So we responded in writing. The department sent the guidance they had requested.
House Democrats want Mueller to bring the report to life and re-energize calls for impeachment, but polls indicate most Americans have not read the 448-page report.
All right, so here's the second part of that, what she's saying. I'm sure you have heard that Bob Barr and the Justice Department issued guidelines, and Bob Barr said, Attorney General Barr said, Bill Barr, you know why I always say that? Because Bob Barr was a congressman in Georgia on the impeachment committee for Clinton, and I interviewed him a million times along with all the other members of that particular committee, and his name is just firmly ensketched in my mind. But it is Bill Barr now, not Bob, so forgive me if you hear me mix that up sometimes. But Bill Barr says that it was Mueller's team who asked them for guidelines. The writer and national security expert who goes by the name Sundance says that Chairman Nadler and Robert Mueller's team have been working hand in hand all along. So they both made this request. Nadler is acting apoplectic over some guidelines, but it's actually just theater. I will read this to you. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler appeared on morning TV shows today, that would be Sunday, to decry the hubris of the letter, calling it incredibly arrogant of Bill Barr to send such instructions. However, in the background, for those who watch these manufactured events, you can see that everything around this letter was staged. Everything around this letter was intentionally designed by the Lawfare group, which includes Jerry Nadler's staff. The Lawfare staff of Chairman Nadler, who are coordinating with the Mueller staff, requested the letter to set up a manufactured narrative before the testimony. Essentially, Team Nadler and Team Mueller requested the letter so that Nadler could decry it. That's the textbook definition of manufactured outrage. And I think this is personally what I think. I think that Mueller doesn't want those hard questions from the Republicans. And so he's going to fall back on this, that he's been instructed by the Attorney General, by the Justice Department, that he can't go beyond, oh, I can't answer that. Oh, I can't answer why I didn't look into Hillary's email. I can't answer why I did this and why I hired a Democratic staff with no neutral persons on my team. I hired people that hated the president. I can't answer that. I can't answer the fact that I actually knew there was no Russian collusion months before we ever ended this investigation. I can't answer that. That's what he's going to do. And so I'm just telling you, that's what's happening with that. We are learning more and more. I've been, you know, reading as I've been gone. Of course, I still read things. You know that. And I wanted to bring to your attention some really fascinating stuff. Let's see, I think I'll go to this one first. One thing that I read. Now, I'm not saying this came from a reliable source, but I have not heard anyone else talking about this. But it looks like, you remember Seth Rich, the young DNC staffer that was killed on the streets of New York, of D.C. in the early morning hours, and they claimed it was a robbery, but nothing was stolen. Remember that? And remember that we spent a great deal of time talking about, and so did Sean Hannity, and before he got his hand slapped, about daring to indicate that Seth Rich was actually the leaker who supplied the Podesta and the DNC email to, I'm not sure who he gave, to WikiLeaks. Julian Assange as much as said that. And now we are hearing reports that, going back to that, saying that really is what happened. And the reason, and remember I speculated about this when the day Julian Assange was arrested and dragged out of the Ecuador or the Ecuadorian embassy, remember? They dragged him out. That was the morning that the Mueller report was going to be released. And I thought, that's really weird timing. That's very strange. And it was the British who pulled him out and then put him in, I think, solitary confinement so he can't talk. And Julian Assange is on record talking to a Fox News host who's, you wouldn't know her. You know what? I'm stumbling to remember her name. I know her well. I just can't think of her name. But she's not on camera very much. She actually said in a public gathering that she spent several hours interviewing Julian Assange, in which Julian told her it was definitely not the Russians that provided WikiLeaks, and Julian is WikiLeaks, with the Clinton email and the Podesta email and the DNC email. And so many are saying that, you know, of course, the Mueller report, all of it rests on the fact that they made this case that it was the Russians who did that. And I've never believed that. I've never believed it. The whole thing has just from day one stunk because if you're just paying attention to what's happening, it made no sense. And this makes sense. This just makes sense. And Julian Assange tried to tell us that Seth Rich was his contact. He was so upset when Seth was killed. Remember that? I'm not saying Julian Assange is the epitome of character, but I don't think he's a liar. That's the interesting thing about Julian. He's done his share of damage to releasing things that were very damaging to American intelligence and others around the world. But I don't think he's a liar. And so if Seth Rich was the person who handed over and made public to WikiLeaks all those email, that completely shreds the entire Mueller report and the entire story. So just watch for that. That I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's ever going to really come out. But that's what more we know about that, that there is at least more talk about it with indications that Seth really was actually the leaker. Wonder if that'll come up today. Probably not, because it's kind of like if you say that, it's like you're a birther. It's the same thing. Or you're a Holocaust denier, or you have cooties or whatever. You can't dare say that. Well, I'm saying it. I think it's probably likely. I've always thought that Seth was the one who had access to all that stuff. And it wasn't a robbery, and it was never investigated by the police. The whole thing surrounding it is just creepy. Combined with Julian Assange's response to it, his public statements, and the fact that this whole Russian thing is a complete hoax is just interesting and frightening. Now, let me go to Real Clear Investigations, Paul Sperry, who's a great investigative reporter. This is really fascinating to me. And I think maybe it's best if I just read Paul's words. Basically, what he's saying here is that now we're learning that James Comey, remember he told the president privately that you are not under investigation. He assured President Trump three times privately that he was not under investigation personally. And President Trump then tried to get him to go, well, then say that. Then go public and say that I am not under investigation. That would help a tremendous amount. This is such a cloud. This is right after he was elected. So here's what we're learning. The refusal. Well, I'll read Paul's words. Why did former FBI Director James Comey refuse to say publicly what he was telling President Trump in private, that Trump was not the target of an ongoing probe? That refusal ignited a chain of events that has consumed Washington for more than 2 years, including Comey's firing by Trump, the appointment of a special counsel, Robert Mueller, and ongoing claims that Trump obstructed justice. Now the answer is emerging. Sources tell Real Clear Investigations that Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz will soon file a report with evidence indicating that Comey was misleading the president. Even as he repeatedly assured Trump that he was not a target, the former director was secretly trying to build a conspiracy case against the president, while at times acting as an investigative agent. Comey was essentially running a covert operation against the president, starting with a private defensive briefing he gave Trump just weeks before his inauguration. They said Horowitz has examined high-level FBI text messages and other communications indicating Comey was actually conducting a counterintelligence assessment of Trump during that January 2017 meeting in New York. Could I just interject? See, here's the point. You can't do that. You can't, as an FBI director, decide to do that, certainly on a president, if you have no evidence. And there was no evidence. I mean, you can see after they did exhaustive research, trying every which way from Sunday to link President Trump to Russia and some collusion. If they could have found something, trust me, they would have said it in the Mueller report. But they found nothing. They had no reason to do this. This is a case of an FBI director taking it on himself to go after an American president elected by the American people to try to destroy him. And let me just say that Devin Nunes and others have concluded that this was simply trying to stop the presidency for political reasons. There's so much more to this article. We'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can read it. There's more that I want to share with you, so don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Weeping may last for the night, but a shout of joy comes in the morning. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. An avowed Brexit supporter will now lead the British government for the first time since the United Kingdom voted to leave the European Union. Boris Johnson, the Brexiteer, will replace Theresa May as Prime Minister after winning the leadership of Britain's Conservative Party. He has vowed to lead Britain out of the European Union with or without a separation deal by October 31st. Boris Johnson's victory is the latest broadside strike against the ravenous and unyielding efforts of the international globalist cabal to wield power. October 31st may become British Independence Day.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
If you're a pastor or ministry leader, you and your spouse are invited to a free American Renewal Project event, August 8th and 9th at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. Speakers like Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA, David Barton of Wall Builders, and Bishop E.W. Jackson will give encouragement and spiritual refreshment. The event will include Issachar training for pastors considering running for elected office. Space is limited. Please register by August 5th at lynchburgrenewal.eventbrite.com or call 800-921-1928.
Thoughts of the child you were carrying keep pouring over in your mind. You wish things could be different, and the loss is overwhelming. A deep, unrelenting sadness overshadows your days, and you wonder if you will feel whole again. There is hope and healing from a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline, 866-482-LIFE, and talk with someone who has been where you are. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. If you care about teenagers and their mental health, the rush to legalize marijuana in America is a bad idea. The THC count, THC is the active ingredient in pot, is 68% higher in the pot teens are smoking today than it was back in the 70s. This is not your father's dope. And the problem is that pot has a dramatic effect on developing teen brains. The part of the brain that controls problem-solving, memory, language, and judgment is not fully developed until age 25, and marijuana messes with that part of the growing brain. As a result, we are seeing an epidemic of dope-induced psychosis, addiction, suicide, depression, and anxiety. As drug treatment consultant Ben Court says, the bottom line is, weed ain't for kids in any form. Eating it, vaping it, smoking it, it's not okay. I couldn't agree more.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. At the White House Monday, U.S. technology firms assured President Trump that they can sell some of their products to the Chinese Communist Party's telecommunications conglomerate Huawei without harming the national security. Unfortunately, these companies are not just interested parties. They have a conflict of interest. Their bottom lines will benefit at least in the short run from propping up Huawei. But our country and many others around the world will suffer if we continue to help the People's Liberation Army's Huawei be a viable source for fifth generation and other telecommunications capabilities. Our personal information, proprietary data, and state secrets will be vacuumed up. The Internet of Things will be susceptible to abuse and even weaponization against us. And Beijing's digital imperialism will help it achieve the dominance worldwide that is Xi Jinping's China dream and our nightmare. Just say no to Huawei, Mr. President. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
With the southern border in crisis, the White House reached all the way back to the Clinton administration to tell illegal migrants, as the acting DHS secretary put it, if you have no legal right to be here, we will remove you.
We're building the wall. So they come out with Donald Trump has built almost no wall. What a lie that is.
Immigration was on President Trump's mind today, talking to teens at a Turning Point USA summit, just as his Department of Homeland Security announced it was expanding its ability to quickly deport people sneaking into the country. Under a 1996 law signed by President Clinton, certain people who enter the country illegally can be removed without seeing a judge. The current enforcement has been limited to people in the country less than 14 days and within 100 miles of the border. DHS is expanding the time frame to 2 years and will apply the policy across the country. In a statement, acting DHS Secretary Kevin McAleenan is saying, "We are past the breaking point and must take all appropriate action to enforce the law along the U.S. border and within the country's interior." Though the authority to expand the criteria is allowed in the original bipartisan bill, Democrats railed against the change. The ACLU told DHS, "We'll see you in court." For the first time today, Immigration and Customs Enforcement released statistics from its expanded interior enforcement operations begun just after the 4th of July. Out of 2,200 people targeted for immediate removal, ICE arrested just 18. Another 17 people were found to be in the country illegally and were arrested.
These are a couple of ICE officers.
This scene in Nashville illustrates the challenge to enforce removals. ICE agents had come to arrest a man, but his neighbors formed a human chain to keep the agents away from the man and his son. The agents eventually left. The man and his son fled to find new accommodations.
A lot of other things happening besides, obviously, Bob Mueller testifying this morning. But the president, what's probably John did not emphasize, because he wouldn't, would he, was that the president now is reinstating or going to enforce a law that was passed by Congress, signed by Bill Clinton, which would bypass this business of letting everybody in and giving them legal counsel and having them appear before a judge. The Congress made it clear that did not have to take place, that every immigrant that comes across or illegal immigrant coming across the border does not have a right to a legal hearing. They can just be simply deported. And so you heard what John said. That's what the president intends to do. And that the thing of it is, Daniel Horowitz, our friend Daniel, has written about this and says that this is really should be lawsuit proof. It is a congressional law just never enforced. It was passed by both houses of Congress, signed by a Democratic president. It's going to be much harder. It's not just a presidential executive order or some other initiative. It'll be much harder for the courts to stop it. So that's the really good news that we should take from that report. I want to go back to this Real Clear Investigations article by Paul Sperry that I began with you earlier, because there's some more important things in here that I want to talk to you about. We know now that Comey was really running an investigation. He lied to the president. He misled him about him being the target of an investigation. Comey was going out of his way he was trying to find things as best he could about President Trump, somehow, some way to bring charges against him. He did it without permission. He did it after, by the way, his first meeting with President Trump on this issue of the lying, filthy, dirty dossier paid for by Hillary Clinton and the DNC. He met with him one day after he had met in the Oval Office with President Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, and they talked about how he should brief Trump. Now, this is in the transition before the president actually took the oath of office, president-elect. A meeting attended by National Security Advisor Susan Rice, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson. And by the way, just let me interject, Jay Johnson, I told you, I remember this specifically. He was the first Obama official to float the possibility of Russia interfering with the elections. And I knew when he said it, because I'd been around the block a few times, that he was setting up a false narrative. He was dropping that into the pool. He was the one that did the shot across the bow. And it was like, what? What is he talking about? And that's how it started. I think that was in the spring before the elections. So Jay Johnson was there and Sally Yates was there. James Clapper was there. Again, Joe Biden, Susan Rice. And they're all there talking about how the FBI director should brief the president-elect Donald Trump. Now, remember that many people there, the insiders are confident that the Obama White House began the orchestration of the undermining and destruction of President Trump. And I'm sure if it's got to come out at some point. I'm sure it's been alluded to. I'm sure you've heard that. This is just one of those other examples of what they were doing. So then Comey leaves that briefing and goes over and briefs the president. And it's in that briefing with the president that he tells him about the dossier. But he doesn't tell him about all the dossier. He doesn't tell him it was paid for by Hillary Clinton and the DNC. He doesn't bother to tell him that. He only tells him about the prostitution part of it. He doesn't tell him about the case that's made that he is colluding with the Russians, that he did collude with them to win the election. He doesn't tell him about that part. And every time he meets with him, he takes copious notes as though he is, in fact, under investigation. He had 9 conversations with President Trump between January and May of 2017. And you'll notice, remember what a big deal he made about he doesn't meet with the president privately, how inappropriate that is. And I just said, it's so FBI directors since time immemorial, since J. Edgar Hoover the first, have met privately with presidents. That's what they do. They have private conversations because they talk about some of the most important things in the country, usually working together, not with one trying to set the other one up, as in this case. Not only that, but it looks as though that James Comey actually placed an FBI agent as a undercover mole to watch Donald Trump and to watch his staff and to report back. Trying to find his name for you. His name is Ferrante. He's Anthony Ferrante. He's a specialist in cybercrime, and they said that between the election and April 2017, when Ferrante finally left the White House, the Trump National Security Council Division supervisor was not allowed to get rid of Ferrante, and he continued working in direct conflict with the no-contact policy between the White House and the Department of Justice. So Ferrante was a plant in there to try to find anything that they could appoint and use against President Trump. Well, there's so much more to that article, but again, I gave you the reference, and we'll put it on our Facebook page, and I want to get to this one. This is also fascinating. This was an article from Newsbusters that just came out, I think, this morning or yesterday. They always track how the media is covering various things. And in this case, they're talking about how the media has covered the Russia collusion story, Mueller and all of it. So here it is. TV offered deluge of Russia news, but buried anti-Trump bias. So that's the name. Weeks before he was even subpoenaed, special counsel Robert Mueller signaled his testimony before 2 House committees would not go beyond his report. If true, it will disappoint liberal journalists still hoping for smoking gun testimony that might rejuvenate the faltering cause of impeachment for President Trump. But there's at least one way this nationally televised forum can make news, and that's by a highly public airing of controversies that aren't even addressed in the Mueller report, namely the lingering questions of bias regarding how the probe began in 2016 and how Mueller's team subsequently handled the investigation. In the 31 months since the president took office, the ABC, CBS, and NBC evening newscasts alone have spent an astounding 2,634 minutes covering the investigations into alleged Russia collusion and obstruction of justice. That's nearly one-fifth, almost 20%, of any Trump coverage was spent on the so-called Russian collusion. And yet these newscasts have barely mentioned some of the crucial unresolved questions surrounding the investigation's bias. And they break it down this way. The text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, you may remember how much they hated. I'll just give you an example. Lisa Page asked Peter Strzok in a text, "Trump's never going to become president, right?" Remember, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were the chief investigators into the Russian collusion. She was Andrew McCabe's legal counsel. They were right in the heart of things, right in the thick of it. So Lisa texts Peter, "Trump's never going to become president, right?" No, he's not. We'll stop it," says Strzok. And, of course, they had the insurance policy. They had all these codes, and they had a name for their operation against Trump. And lots of people were involved. So this is now MRC's assessment of how the media has covered it. about the agent's biased text messages? 40 minutes, and this is between January 2017 and July 2019. 40 minutes, 1.5%. How much did they spend on using Democratic-funded dossier on the fact that it was funded by the Democrats, the dossier? 34 minutes in that period of time, 1.3% of their coverage. Allegedly misleading a FISA court, which is a whole other issue, which if I have time, I'm going to get into that. Just shocking, honestly shocking. The FISA court, highly respected, how the FBI played it and used bad information, and how it looks like it's possible FISA judges cooperated as well. A friend of, remember that Andrew Contreras, it's Contreras, was one of the judges in the FISA court who signed off on these subpoenas, and he's very good friends, I believe, with Peter Strzok. Remember they had dinner together as families with other members of this little cabal? John Brennan, as I recall, also. So the fiasco and corruption, the FISA court, the network spent 20 minutes on it, 0.8% of coverage. And that's 0.8% of the coverage of the Russian scandal, not of their whole network. Other anti-Trump biases, 11 minutes. The fact that Mueller chose mostly Democratic lawyers, 2.5 minutes, 2.5 minutes since January through July. That the DOJ was withholding documents and not cooperating. They spent 2 minutes on it. So you can see why your neighbors and friends don't know anything and why they don't understand when you start talking about trying to make the case for President Trump and how they went after him. They don't know because they don't listen to this show and they don't often watch Fox. They think it's horrible because it's been branded by the left. So the previously undisclosed news that Hillary Clinton's campaign had funded the dossier only interested networks for a single night. Overall, the networks limited their coverage of the dossier to just 34 minutes, barely 1% of all the Russia news. And by the way, on the dossier, FBI analysts found only 90%. They found 90% of the dossier's claims to be either wrong, non-verifiable, or open source intelligence found within a Google search. In other words, worthless, useless. And that's what they used to come after the president. But your neighbors don't know that because this is what the networks did with all that information. All right, so that article, there's more to that too. We'll put that on our Facebook page. TV offered deluge of Russian news, but buried anti-Trump bias. And then one more that I want to get to before you go watch that testimony. This is by John Solomon, who's probably covered this as closely as anyone besides Sarah Carter. And John says that Special Prosecutor John Durham, he's also still investigating along with Bill Barr, Bill Barr and others, and the Mike Horowitz. So Special Prosecutor John Durham is investigating European academic Joseph Misfood. And I'm going to have to paraphrase this because I'm going to run out of time here. But basically what happened was Joseph Misfood reached out to this Papadopoulos, who was this young staffer early on the Trump election team. And he was just, didn't have a central role. But Joseph Misfood reached out with him, and he, along with Stefan Halper, and an Australian, the ambassador in Australia, I think it was the ambassador, a former ambassador, basically fed Papadopoulos this notion that that there were email that were going to be made public from Hillary Clinton, and that the Russians were involved in this. And then they goaded Papadopoulos, got him drunk, and he was in another meeting, and he simply repeated, I think, to the Australian what he'd just been told by Joseph Misfood. And the way it was twisted, they said that Papadopoulos knew all about the Hillary Clinton email and the Russian interference, and that he was telling them. And that's what they used to start this, to justify searching and surveilling the Trump election team. It is a disaster. It's disgraceful. And maybe we'll hear some about it. We hope so. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.